Trust Business Lunch, WGN Radio. Happy 3rd of July to you. This is John Williams. By the way, Elise Glink joins us now from ThinkGlink Media. Elise, I just wanted to mention again, and maybe you would chime in too, overwhelmingly, you have told us this morning that you really were enjoying the NASCAR event. Either you were there in the rain or you were watching it on TV, but as much as we griped and moaned and wondered, the worst day ever for a NASCAR street race, Chicagoans felt very good about what they saw on TV. Did you get a chance to take any of it in?
I saw some of it. I was really watching all the crazy things that were happening because of the rain, like the tires floating away from the pit.
Yeah.
I just thought that was remarkable.
Imagine driving on a wet pavement with slick tires, no visible tread, doing 100 miles an hour into a curve. I mean, that's what these guys were doing.
It's impressive.
And then sliding into the barriers.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about, since we're on the topic of the 4th of July weekend, 4th of July spending. What have you noticed about that?
Well, it's interesting. There's been a couple of studies that have come out. You know, everybody's focused still on inflation and how much more expensive food is. And 4th of July is one of those things where we typically go to parties and everybody brings something. Tonight, which is, of course, the 3rd, my husband Sam and I, we're going to go join a bunch of our neighbors at the lakefront and watch, things go hopefully sparkling in this lovely clear sky tonight. And we're all bringing different things. And so I decided to look up and see how much people are actually spending on their 4th of July, what it is that they're trying to cook, and some numbers around it. And so one of the things that really surprised me was just how much we're all spending on food. And it looks like we're slated to spend more than $9.5 billion on food just for the 4th of July.
That's a lot. That's more than I thought. I saw some of your notes on this from Meridian, that if you are going to eat lettuce in a salad or on a sandwich this weekend, it came from California, almost certainly. That if you're going to have a melon, it came from Florida, California, Georgia, or Texas, almost certainly. I think we just take for granted how something can be in the ground in California yesterday and on your table fresh and delicious 3 days later. You know, and that's amazing to me.
Yeah. I mean, think about, you know, the farmers markets. I was at our local farmers market, last weekend or the weekend before. And, I was looking around for corn. Well, of course, the corn isn't growing locally. So it comes from somewhere. And the farmers are like, here it is. Here's my corn. But, of course, it's not, you know, local Illinois corn, or maybe some of it's from southern Illinois. But we do eat from everywhere around the country. And I think that, you know, we don't ever think enough about just what it takes to get those cherries from California, which are bursting and delicious right now, you know, to our local Costco. But it certainly adds to the cost when you've got trucking and logistics and high gasoline prices and so on.
Thomas Jefferson was on with us a little while ago. And I've often thought, maybe I'll bring this up to him sometime, but can you imagine taking somebody from the 18th century and taking them to a Mariano's, and they walk in and they see that garden of fresh produce, the very best produce, and then you turn the corner and there's deli-prepared foods, and then the most beautiful, delicious-looking fish and steaks and chops. I mean, What an otherworldly experience that would have been for them.
Well, you know, on the random 4th of July, right, you're going to buy, we Americans will buy 150 million hot dogs. Just that number alone was so much more than the population of the United States when he was when he was president. 750 million pounds of chicken. And 5% of the national beer consumption happens over the July 4th weekend, John. And I know you'll be contributing, as will I.
Yes. I will also be having something with tonic. 150 million hot dogs eaten tomorrow or over the weekend. Most of them by a guy named Joey, by the way. So that's also kind of an interesting stat. Well, let's talk about some other business trends and people's debt and how they're managing it. We'll pick it up here in a minute. Elise Glink, you are also looking at debt, how much people have, how they're managing it, how they feel about that. What's the story there?
So there's a new survey of 2,000 adults from the company Beyond Finance and their collection. They work with collections and people who have tremendous amounts of debt. And it seems to me that what this survey is all about is how long it would take a typical American who has debt to, if it magically one day they woke up and they didn't have debt anymore, how long it would take them to have more credit card debt or other kinds of debt. And so Beyond Finance went out and they asked this question, and they found out that people think they could only last about little over 8 weeks without incurring new credit card debt, which in my mind, you know, is very, very surprising, because I would think that once somebody has debt paid off, they'd be so relieved that they would do anything to avoid having it. But in fact, 62% of people said that it was the cost of living was high. They would have unexpected expenses. They were stressing rising interest rates being a factor in how they thought they would reincur debt. And 16% are still worried about keeping up with the Joneses or whatever your neighbor's names are. And I just thought that was really surprising.
What's the amount of debt that most folks have?
Well, most people have a little over $56,000 worth of debt. And what's interesting about that, there's some student loan debt in that, and there's credit card debt. But 56% of people are charging everyday necessities, groceries, gas, prescriptions, food, medicine. They're charging all of these things on their credit cards, and that's where the debt is sort of piling up. So when we talk a lot about how people are living paycheck to paycheck, I think this is what happens when people even can't do that.
Trying to figure out how you get $56,000, because if you said student loans and credit cards, for most folks, that's tens of thousands of dollars, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
A car loan would be another $10,000-$20,000, maybe more. But that must not include your mortgage. That's probably not considered debt, right?
No, it's not considered installment debt. It is considered installment debt. It's not the kind of debt that credit card debt is. And I would point out,
wow,
that only 8% of cars, new cars on the market today, are priced under $30,000. Only 8%. It is the most expensive car market out there right now. And in fact, it's gotten so expensive that people are now pushing the average length of loans. So it used to be you paid off your car in 3 years, and then it was 5 years, and now it's 7 years and even 9 years.
It's amazing that they would lend you the money for that. I guess, hey, they'd lend it to you for 100 years, if, as long as you make your payments, right?
That's right.
Depending on what the rate is, they'll come out ahead. Here's another stat that you sent to Iridian. Iridian sent to me. 56% of us owe for gas and groceries, necessities, 56%.
Yeah. So, you know, I think about that, and I think about how, you know, when you take a step back and you think about this from, say, the 30,000-foot level, what does all of this debt do to people? And I've really been thinking about this, John, because, of course, in the wake of the Supreme Court ruling on, I think it was Friday, where they said no to President Biden's plan to wipe out student loan debt,
mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to have to start repaying student loan debt. I think it's September 1st.
Yep.
And the problem with that, of course, is that we've now had 3 years of not doing that. And so 40 million Americans have not had to make those payments, which could be $300 to $500 a month. And I just wonder what's going to happen to personal debt when you now, in addition to just living paycheck to paycheck, or you're even in the red every week, what's going to happen if you're layering on that kind of student loan debt? And I think we're going to see some these numbers all jump up dramatically.
Yeah, I was just looking at what the average monthly payment is on a student loan, and it's over $350. And, you know, this is something that I asked one of our guests. I think it was Tom Fortino. I think it was your colleague Sunday morning. And Tom didn't jump on this the way, maybe it was somebody else. But here was the question. Mm-hmm. Do you think that, say, that $354 that most people have had to spend on, have had the opportunity to spend on other things like groceries and clothes and travel, but now that's got to go to their student loan again? won't that affect the economy? Or wouldn't that at least do something to the inflation rate? Because now there are going to be fewer dollars out there chasing so many goods. Maybe that will help pull inflation down. It would seem to me like there would be some impact when everybody has to start transitioning the money from whatever they're spending it on to student debt.
Oh, you're exactly right. It's kind of interesting because I don't hear enough economists talking about this. Mark Zandi was on CNBC this morning, and he was saying he thinks that the administration has walked the fine line and that we will come close to a recession. It'll feel recessionary for some people, but we won't technically fall into a recession. Jobs are still strong. People are making a little more money. They're still spending. But what happens when they stop spending is really the question. And I do think that we're going to start seeing that happen, you know, almost momentarily, because, you know, September 1st is around the corner. People are going to start getting those bills in August for September 1st. You know, it's due September 1st. You typically get your bill a month in advance. And so they're going to be thinking about that payment that's due in September. And I think at the end of July, beginning of August, they're going to pull back on their spending, thinking that they've got to get those payments made. And so I do think there's going to be a direct impact on spending, and I do think there's going to be a direct impact, maybe not in, as much on inflation, although less demand should help inflation continue to come down, which it is anyway. But I do think it's going to cause a real issue for people who want to buy homes, want to buy new cars. They're just simply not going to be able to qualify for those loans.
It's a credit card is the single, though, biggest problem with revolving debt like that.
Yeah, it is right now. Although, again, you've got, you know, auto loans, which are installment loans. You've got medical debt, which depends on how it's financed. If it's on your credit card, it's revolving. If it's not, it's installment. There's just a whole lot of debt that people are accumulating, and it's kind of what I would think of as hidden debt, you know, things that they're not staring in the face every day. And I would just like to say that I think that we could have, when in, you know, interest rates were 2% 3-4 years ago, when President Biden took office, he could have still refinanced everybody's student loans as part of the pandemic and taken those 7 and 8, 9% loans all the way down to 2% and made them government financing. And while it wouldn't have been free and you wouldn't have been, you know, gotten rid of it, at least it would be, those payments would be more affordable today. But I believe that that time has now passed.
It doesn't mean Congress can't do something about it. And I don't, you know, the House doesn't have the inclination to do it, and the Senate would be tough to guess. The president clearly does. But what the Supreme Court said was not that you can forgive debt, but that you have to do so with congressional approval, and the president doesn't have that. So that's where we are on that. And looks like I'm out of time. It's 12:28. Elise, you and Tom talk more like this Sunday morning, right?
We sure do. Hope you'll join us 7 a.m.
Think Glink Media's and Best Money Moves, Elise Glink with Tom Fortino, Sunday morning at 7. Jim Dahlke joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. ChicagoWindow.com's a good place to read his stuff. He's the national editor there, and he joins us again on WGN. Happy 3rd of July, Jim. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
You shooting off some fireworks later today or tomorrow?
You know, it's tricky. We got the two-year-old, so he's not exactly into big booms in the sky yet. So maybe we're a couple years away from really diving into fireworks. But I will be very excited for when that day comes.
You know, between small children and dogs, and now I saw another report over the weekend, veterans who are traumatized by the bang, 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 bang. I don't know, the fireworks and our love of them is going away, but it's not just people with small pets that don't want to hear their neighbor. You know, like if you want to go to the Village of Schaumburg's fireworks display, that's great. But you just blasting them off all night in your backyard, you might ask the neighbors how they feel about that before you do it. You know what I mean?
I do. And, you know, I'm trying to ease my son into it. So we tried to buy those little poppets, you know, that you throw on the ground, they make the little pop sound, but they couldn't find them anywhere. I think they're sold out in the entire Chicago suburbs.
Drive to Indiana, man. let's talk about, you often talk to us about funding from venture capitalists for all of these things in the Chicago area. What's the status of that these days?
Yeah, it's a good question, John. So, you know, it's something that we watch closely. You know, funding continues to be down compared to its highs of 2021. You know, the venture capital market is just really not where it was, you know, a year, 2 years ago. You know, the folks who are watching this, the data firms like PitchBook, who track this really closely, are expecting, you know, more of the same, if not worse, in the second half of the year. And so, you know, what experts are saying is that, you know, hey, good companies are still going to get funded. Companies who are doing well, companies who are, you know, really building important technology will continue to get venture capital funding. But, you know, some of these mediocre companies and below are really going to be struggling. And so, you know, what we're seeing right now, you know, as this sort of funding environment dries up, we're starting to see this wave of startup shutdowns. So, you know, first it was kind of the wave of layoffs, and now companies are actually closing their doors who are just unable to raise funding and kind of keep up with their traction in the market. And so, you know, what we've seen right now is, you know, a high profile startup that closed recently is Zoom. This is a pizza making startup out of the Bay Area. They were valued at more than $2 billion and backed with over $400 million in VC funding, including from SoftBank. And they shut their doors just last month. And, you know, there's another company in Pittsburgh called Argo AI. They were funded by $1 billion from Ford. They closed their doors in late 2022. So, you know, we're starting to see these companies that were, you know, extremely well funded get to the point where they're unable to continue raising and just are really running out of gas. So, you know, what I think we're going to see is even more of that in the back half of 2022 as the funding environment gets tight and the companies who aren't doing very well are really struggling to continue to raise.
Hmm. What happened to that pizza company?
Yeah, so this is, you know, bankruptcy here. So, you know, this was a company that was, you know, a very, very highly touted, you know, essentially a pizza-making robot startup. Got a lot of press in the early days and raised a lot of funding. Back when funding was easy to come by, you know, a pizza-making robot maybe makes a little more sense in 2021 than it does in 2023 in the venture market. And I think it's indicative, right, of what we're going to start to see kind of across the board. You know, I was talking to a professor at Northwestern University who is an entrepreneurship professor and also a venture capitalist himself, and put it pretty bluntly, who said, you know, there are more startups right now than there deserve to be. More companies were able to get funding over the last few years than there really should be. And what we're going to see is, you know, quite a bit of thinning the herd here. And what we're going to see then from there is really that the cream of the crop is going to rise. And those are going to be the companies that continue to do well. So the startup market, not totally dead, of course. There's still lots of investable businesses. But right now, I think we're seeing quite a bit of the thinning of the herd.
Is there a category that you think will survive better than another category?
Yeah, I mean, artificial intelligence is the one where it kind of bucks all the trends we've just been talking about. You know, where funding is drying up and startups are shutting down, artificial intelligence startups are raising money like it's 2021 all over again. They are getting thrown all kinds of cash. This is in part because it's very, very expensive to run artificial intelligence companies. The chips that you need are very, very expensive. It's like companies like NVIDIA are doing so well selling these chips to startups. And so you were seeing companies, you know, raise billions of dollars in startup funding, hundreds of millions for companies who don't even have a product yet. This is just, you know, impressive teams spun out of big tech companies like raise some really significant capital for these artificial intelligence startups. So AI is certainly an industry that's continuing to do well. Will it continue this trajectory or sort of ebb and flow like the cycles that we've seen in the past, like Web3 and, you know, kind of these other startup fads? We'll have to wait and see. But I think a lot of people in tech are very, very bullish on AI.
But you do make me think that maybe I would invest in a pizza company if, in fact, their pizza robot was a good idea and it worked. And maybe I wouldn't invest in an AI guy if, in fact, his idea wasn't so good. That, you know, the products should stand on their individual merit regardless of the category. And I wonder if that's happening. Or are these people, I mean, some people will probably lose if they indiscriminately throw money into AI if it's not a good AI venture, right?
That's right. And then there's also something to be said for, I think people like to go into a pizza shop and see their pizza made by a person. You know, it's yeah. One of those industries where it's like we don't need everything automated in the sense like, you know, I still like to see the guy back there in the big oven throwing my pizza around. Like there's something fun about that, and you know that you're getting kind of that sort of quality product there versus the pizza robot who's beeping and booping back there.
Right. Right. I mean, I want a robot to vacuum my living room. I'm okay with that. That's not something that I have to witness or do. But the guy touching my food and personalizing my pizza, maybe I don't want a machine to do it. Although, I don't know. Okay, that makes sense now in the rearview mirror, Jim. But there's a cocktail maker that seems to go pretty good. People love an automated cocktail. Is that cocktail machine from Chicago still a going thing?
It is, yes. So there's a cocktail maker called Bartesian, a local startup here in the city. Yeah, they're still cooking. So they had a B2B turn as well, where they got their machine into places like Wrigley Field and, you know, kind of other venues like that, right, to automate your cocktail. I think that makes sense. You know, I think one thing with the AI versus human conversation is, I think as long as AI is automating the repetitive, boring tasks and not automating creativity, I think that's where the sweet spot is. I don't think people need AI-generated music. You know, I think we still want musicians to create music, but hey, if we can, you know, have AI software to kind of take away those repetitive tasks, I think that's where AI is really going to win. So it's a fascinating question.
Well, I think it is, and I think it is the question of the day. I was listening to a podcast where young people in college were talking about how they use AI to write their assignments and help them with their tests. And the kids, to the person, at least the ones that they interviewed in this podcast, maybe some of them have more angst about it, but they were indifferent. They go, why would I bust my butt to learn about Brazil? It's just a required class in my curriculum. I'm not going to be a Brazil guy. But I took a class on Brazil, and then I just asked AI to write my paper about Brazil for the class, and it did it. And there was not a moment of remorse. They did not, like the questioner said, well, do you sort of regret that you aren't learning, that you're, you know, you might not even have read the paper? Do you miss that opportunity? Are you going to regret that? They go, nah, I wanted to go outside. I didn't want to do that. I mean, they did not give a whit about it. Now, that's not everybody, but it's very easy for college kids and high school kids to do that now.
It's true. Plagiarism is easier than ever. The one, you know, among the several cautions for those students is that now catching that plagiarism is also easier than ever. There are also tools that schools can use that know when you're using ChatGPT, for example, to write your term paper. So, hey, we've been, you know, school and college since we started those classes, but, it's certainly a lot easier to do that now. It's also easier to get caught. So word to the wise there if you're thinking about using ChatGPT to write your term paper.
Well, and at the risk of sounding like a boomer, you'll be a more interesting person at cocktail parties or maybe when you're playing beer pong if you just know something about the world and didn't have a machine do it for you. Just think of it as internal personal development. That's what I worry about. Maybe the machines will do all of this and we don't need to know how to multiply or spell. But what are you going to know? Like, what are you replacing that opportunity with? And if it's just, I went to the beach, that's a net loss to me, Jim.
That's right. And, you know, sort of the irony, too, is that, you know, what ChatGPT is really, really good at is summarizing information for you to help you learn more. So rather than using it to rewrite, you know, your paper, you could be getting, like, very, very deep research on topics. And very, very quickly, too. It's you know, sort of Google on steroids.
Yeah, well, right. So if you use that opportunity to really get expert at something you do care about, I'll defer to you on that. But it didn't sound like that's what was happening, and now I'm out of time. Jim, it's always interesting to talk to you. Let's do this again next week.
Thanks, John.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. As we head into the 4th of July, the American Pyrotechnics Association says they expect a big jump in the sale of legal fireworks. They say sales could increase by $100 million this year, with total sales topping $2.4 billion. The association also stresses safety when using fireworks and to only buy them legally. Gas prices around Chicago are down nearly 12 cents a gallon. Gas Buddy says in the last week, the average gallon was $4.20. Prices are a little over 3 cents a gallon higher than a month ago, but almost $1.50 less than a year ago. Byline Bank Corp., the Chicago-based parent company of Byline Bank, has completed its merger with Inland Bank Corp. That brings Byline's total assets to approximately $8.7 billion. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
John Ladisic joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, along with Dan Madzel from Builder Viewer, a way to virtually 3D see the interior of a project that isn't done yet. John, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm wonderful, John. Thank you for inviting us.
And Dan, how are you today?
Terrific, terrific. Thanks, John, for having me.
Builder Viewer is a website I'm on now, but how does this work, Dan? What do people do with Builder Viewer? It's virtual goggles that you wear, right?
Yes, that's definitely an option to go to. So basically, we take all the designs and the home blueprints and really just present a cutting-edge technology for the future homeowner. So they're able to see all their design choices. They're able to really visualize the space and see in photorealistic quality what their future home is going to look like.
Huh. So, John, am I looking at the blueprints and then you digitally insert what the finished interior would look like?
Right, and it could be the exterior as well. It could be not limited to a home. It could be a restaurant or a yacht or anything you would want, really. But we believe that the 3D rendering is that first measurement. When you build anything, everybody knows to measure twice and cut once. So this is your first measurement.
So I've seen where people are able to virtually stage a home on real estate websites. How is this similar to or different than that, guys?
Okay, so if you virtually stage a home, you generally have either static 2D or you could do a stage in 3D, but you're not able to immerse yourself in, especially using the goggles and have a walkthrough.
Oh, right. Yeah,
so
right.
So we work with...
I noticed on the site, for instance, I'll click on a red dot and then it's sort of like Google Maps takes me to that location, right?
Definitely, yes.
So you can walk through the interior of an unfinished space the way it would be, in other words.
Correct. So if just the bones are up, you know, and the flooring, the concrete floor, they're able to walk into their house and see what their home will look like, down to the molding, to the marble that they've chosen for the bathrooms, the backsplash, cabinets, everything will be in place. That way it'll save a lot of time, eliminate any kind of indecision, and certainly help with the builder when it comes to reducing change orders. Because that's a really big problem these days, John, especially with the cost of the building supplies.
So, in other words, if I looked at it and I said, you know what, but I don't like the floor that way, then can we click in and have another floor displayed for me?
Yeah, it's not so much a click in, but you could make as many changes as you want, and it's generally updated through our system in less than 24 hours.
Huh. It's fascinating. I mean, I've just been enjoying clicking through the website and looking at the things you guys do. It's called Builder Viewer, right? Builder Viewer?
Yes, yep. They could go to builderviewer.com, one word, and check out. There's a lot of... samples, a commercial space that was done. Also, of course, what you were looking through, John, is the custom home layout.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's really well done, and what a convenient way to not only see the future of your home, your building, but a good way to save on time and money. John Ladisic and Dan Madzel. This won't be the last time we talk, guys. BuilderViewer.com is the website. Thanks for giving us a sneak peek.